Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. So James, Parliament isn't sitting today, we haven't had Prime Minister's questions, but we have had some political news that the Treasury in particular has been responding to.
Yeah, we've got the GDP figures out today. They are 0.3% growth for the quarter. That's not spectacular. And Philip Hammond has said that, you know, that the uncertainty effects around Brexit are taking a toll on the economy. But I think it is worth remembering that you know, before the referendum, people were predicting a recession at this point. And I think there is obviously is uncertainty, and the general election result has heaped uncertainty on the Brexit uncertainty. But I think if you look at how the economy has performed overall since the referendum, I think if people had known that before they voted, I suspect the margin would have been a bit more convincing than 52-48.
But Brexit is going to be quite a useful excuse whether or not it's the actual cause of lower growth.
Look, I think you can't deny that Brexit is having an effect on business investment in that people don't quite know what the UK is going to do. They don't know what the transition arrangements for how Britain is going to leave are. And I think what the election result has done is created added uncertainty about what kind of economy the UK is going to be after Brexit. But I think that the predictions that Brexit was going to result in an automatic recession, those haven't happened.
And Katie, we've also had an ongoing debate in the Labour Party about its stance on Brexit. I think this might be podcast number 82 on where Labour stands on Brexit. Just tell us where it does stand on Brexit, if you possibly can, in a very short few sentences.
Yeah, I think if I had the answer, I'd probably be quite rich. But we began to think that we knew what their position was at the weekend. Jeremy Corbyn suggested on the Mail show that Labour supported Britain leaving the single market. Then we had Barry Gardiner do a bit of a U-turn on his Brexit position. He's in the shadow cabinet. He wrote a piece saying why we'd need to leave the single market and the customs union, which is music to many Brexiteers' ears. I think we're one of the first, we had a UKIP MEP coming out in support of an article.
Patrick O'Flynn, wasn't it? Yeah.
Something out in support of by a Corbynite, because this is what they want. Lots of people in Labour were very upset by the comments. They think that there is room, because of the Parliament arithmetic, for Labour to negotiate a softer Brexit. Now, today, just to add a bit more confusion, John McDonnell has appeared to suggest that Labour could support the UK staying in the single market after Brexit. So I think we are probably exactly back where we started a few weeks ago, still no clearer.
But it's quite unusual, isn't it, that the front bench and the leadership are so obviously at loggerheads. We've had tensions between Keir Starmer and Corbyn for quite a while, but Barry Gardiner is a real Corbyn loyalist, isn't he?
Yeah, and he now seems to be speaking with Corbyn saying that they want to leave the single market.
So what was he up to?
Perhaps he's just woken up and smelt the coffee, realised what the leader wants, and is now singing his tune. But in the past, he definitely hasn't been on that.
But isn't it logic? I mean, the part of Labour's problem is that the Tory party has been obsessed by the issue of Brexit. But Labour, this isn't really a debate that many people on Labour front bench should immerse themselves in. And Barry Gardiner sounded like, in his op-ed to me, like he just realised that if you stayed in the customs union, you couldn't do trade deals for anybody else. So God, we better leave that thing. And it was. He sounded like he just found this fact out, and he was very surprised. And I think this is part of Labour's problem, which is they haven't really thought about these issues, and so they are all over the place for that reason. I think the fascinating question is this: is does defying Corbyn on single market membership, is that a disloyalty that marks you out for deselection? If that becomes the case, then I think the politics, internal politics in Labour Party, get very interesting. You know, I would say that the most important fact about Vince Cable isn't that he's 74 or a ballroom dancing expert, but that he's a former member of the Labour Party. You know, he is not a tribal Lib Dem. If you did begin to see people saying, right, you keep voting for Chuckramuna amendments on the single market in defiance of Labour Whip, that means you're disloyal and aren't fit to represent our constituency, then I think politics gets very interesting.
So we're back to the talk of the new party once again.
I think the new party won't go away, because both the Tories and Labour are actually in a very similar place on Brexit. And that is not where 48% of the electorate were when the referendum was happened. That's certainly still not where at least 24% of the electorate are. And that's not where lots of MPs and politicians are.
But I think the slight contradiction when it comes to like reselection threats is a lot of the Corbynistas who might be quite up for getting rid of Blairites do quite like the EU. They don't necessarily, or they haven't fully come to terms with what Corbyn wants and what it means for the single market.
I think this is a split between, not to get too much into the criminology of this, but this is a split between the kind of Benite Corbynistas and the more cultural Corbynistas. I mean, the cultural Corbynistas, the younger ones, generally think that, you know, Europe is good in a kind of Bridget Jones sense of the word good, while as the older Benites realise that you can't actually do the kind of economic change that Corbyn wants to introduce within the confines of the EU.
And this time last year, the Corbynistas were talking about something that they called the chicken coup, which was Labour MPs trying to remove Jeremy Corbyn from the leadership and failing. But now we're actually talking about actual chicken coups. Katie, just give us the chicken latest.
Yeah, so this week Liam Fox has been in Washington to start UK-US trade talks, lay the foundations, and every day what we've been talking about is chicken, and chlorinated chicken to be more precise. After there are reports that a UK-US trade deal might involve chicken washed in chlorine coming to a supermarket near you, lots of people got a bit worried. Lots of Remain groups over in Britain were quite quick to hop on this and be like, bleached chicken, have you ever eaten it, Liam?
Has Fox eaten the chicken?
I think Fox has, and I think anyone who's gone to America probably has eaten chicken washed in chlorine, whether or not they're aware of it at the time. It passes the health and safety standard. The issue comes to the fact whether it lowers standards, you know, at the farm where the chickens are killed. But where we're at today is the cabinet themselves have given this story some more chicken legs. Liam Fox has kept the door open to chlorine chicken coming to a supermarket near you. In an interview, he refused to rule it out. And then a few hours later on the other side of the Atlantic, Michael Gove on the Today programme said it was a red line that we would not cross.
I think this is, I mean, the argument about, as Katie said, the real point about this chlorine washed chicken is not the chlorine washing. It's what it might be kind of making up for further down the chain. I personally think the best feature for British agriculture is to argue for better labelling and to sell itself as a high-end product. Whether with the EU or the US, it's never going to be able to compete purely on price. And it's much better off trying to make a niche for itself within both the UK market and global markets as a high-end, high welfare standard, high quality product. You know, I think, you know, you can say this about chlorine washed chicken in the US, but the UK is equally unable to compete in the long term with Polish hog farms, you know, which take up amounts of space that are simply not possible in this country. So UK agriculture has got to find somewhere on a higher end, higher place on the value chain to try and compete. And I think you've also got to have some confidence that the consumer won't purely buy on price. Everyone is convinced that the consumer purely buys food on price. I am not sure that that is actually accurate in the contemporary world.
Thank you, James and Katie. And a reminder that you can listen to all of these podcasts through the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots.
Why wait for tomorrow's papers? The best analysis of the day's news is already on Coffee House. To subscribe to the Evening Blend email in order to receive the best of The Spectator each day, just head to spectator.co.uk/blend.